This is Thrace Relations, a podcast about Spartacus, the television series on Starz Channel. Hello, I'm Em.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
Welcome back to Thrace Relations. This is episode 2 of the season Vengeance, and this episode is titled A Place in This World. How did you guys like this episode?
It was good. It made me laugh in a few parts. You know, it was a bit comical, and not that I think it was intentional, but there was just some parts that I laughed at.
Yeah, there was a couple of laugh out loud moments, but it was because of inside jokes with the show. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, meaningful looks that people gave each other and stuff like that, or little things that people said that you already know their characters. That's what's so great about this season, is because all the groundwork is laid and we can just kind of go turbo forward and really take the story in the direction the writers wanted to go in the first place.
So any comments on the title, A Place in This World?
I think it has to do with Animaeus. Mm-hmm. You know, when they ask him in the last episode, they say, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to go the only place that a man without honor can go. Yeah. Or did he say a beast without honor?
Well, it's his origin.
Yeah.
We're getting his origin story.
It's Animaeus year one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's about Animaeus. I think it's about Mira, too, trying to find her place in the world, because that new slave, that blonde slave, is almost challenging her idea or her purpose within the group. She's like, am I Spartacus's whore? What? Like, I never even saw myself like that. So I think she's wondering her purpose. Animaeus has lost his purpose. He had gained a purpose through Titus Badiatis, and so he's going back to reset himself at the pits.
Yeah. It's also about Tiberius /
yes,
Nasir, or Nasir.
Nasir.
It is with an R. Okay.
Nasir.
Yeah. So it's about him too, because Spartacus is trying to help him find his purpose as a freed slave. So the whole theme of the episode is, who are you and what's your place in the world, and who's going to decide that for you?
Yes.
You know, and I think it was done pretty masterfully by having it done at like three angles at the same time. You know, I like that. The show's known for that, though. They do that all the time. Whether the watcher catches it or not isn't, you know, that's up to us. But I think they're always having these parallels between
the characters.
You know, yeah.
Does that title apply to Glaber at all in any way?
You could, but I don't think as much as the other three that we've mentioned.
Right. If you stretch it out, you could almost do it for everybody that was in the episode, because Alethea is having that conversation with, what's that chick's name?
Oh, Sepia?
Sepia. She's having that conversation with Sepia, and she's starting to realize her place in the world. She's not this darling of the Roman gossip scene anymore. She's playing the wife, and she's got, you know, she's going to be a mother, and she's being
dealing with the abuse that she takes on.
That's right, the victimhood that she has to bear, her cross to bear, so to speak.
Or Alethea.
Yeah. So, you know, so almost everybody is experiencing, you know, it's kind of a commentary on everybody's place.
We're settling in for the second season, you know. We know the direction that they might take us.
The board is set. The pieces are moving. That's.
Yeah. Recap time. So, first scene opens with heavy breathing and someone bleeding at the mouth. What we are seeing here turns out to be a young Animaeus at the pits. He wins the match with some vicious use of the bone daggers, which he could have bought on eBay, by the way.
Nice.
Titus Badiatis is present and seeks to purchase him. All men can be tamed, no matter how wild, he says. Or that's his philosophy, and he states that. Animaeus was bought for 8 denarii.
Now, did you guys notice that the slaver looked like Taggart from The Office? No? I swear it was him at first.
Taggart?
Yeah, you know, his drunk friend that comes in all the time.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. What's up, D-bag?
I didn't know. I didn't even.
Yeah, it was similar. It's not him, but it.
No, you didn't realize. I was thinking that you didn't realize that this was a flashback at first, because when you see Titus in the background, you're kind of like, what? I saw you kind of be like taken aback, like, this guy's dead. What is this all about? Yeah.
He's still alive, cool. Just like Lucretia.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep. This is an R.A. Salvatore novel.
Find out that he can play these games even better.
Everybody comes back.
Yeah.
He looks young, too, just like they did in the last season, or in God's Arena. They did a good job making him look younger. And he's a badass, Titus is.
Yeah.
Well, he really gets affronted when that slaver is like, for Tendinari, he's yours. You can train him, you can fuck him, and you just see the look on Titus's face. He's just like, you know, that's when he kind of gets in his shit. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'll give you 8 denarii, and you're going to take it.
And the guy's like, you trying to fuck me? He's like, you would know, because you'd be split in two.
Now, how much did they pay for Crixus? It was 10, wasn't it?
50. But he was only worth 10.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So we are now with Animaeus in the present, and he is back at the pits. This is what he meant when he told Crixus he will reside himself in a place where an animal without honor belongs. At the Ludus, Glabber and Marcus are having a discussion, and they are discussing Spartacus. And they have found out that they were in the cisterns, like under their noses, basically. And they talk about the need for more men. And Marcus does suggest, you know, getting men from Sepius. But Glabber says, however, Sepius is aligned with Verinius. And
Verinius is the guy who was with Alithia's dad in the first episode of this season.
Yes.
The blonde
one who made
guy.
Overtures about Alithia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. He is a public figure that existed during this time period. Like his name was Publius or Publius Verinius.
So Sepius, it's Sepia and Sepius, the brother and sister.
Yes.
Sepia is the girl. Okay. So right. Sepius enjoys his patronage, Verinius's.
Yes. So in that way, Verinius has some control over what Sepius does with his men.
Right. Okay.
And Glabber has distaste for Verinius because of, you know, what we've already seen and all the backbiting that's gone on between them. So.
Well, you got the impression last episode that when Alithia's dad was, you know, showing him off like, oh, this is Verinius, you know, this is what a real son-in-law should be like. Mm-hmm. Not you, you piece of shit, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear that from their father-in-law, you know, it's just like.
It does cause for some empathy towards Glabber.
A little bit. Until you think about all the stuff he did and then you're like, never mind.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So, at this point, Lucretia creeps into Glabber's office and begins her denunciation regarding all of their enemies. She claims to have a direct path to the gods, and she plans to use it. Glabber allows her to go to the marketplace and gather what aids she needs. Glabber then decides to meet with Sepius, and Marcus leaves to make arrangements. Glabber encourages Lucretia in her dark priestess ways. He is looking for all the help he can get now.
So she's going to basically do some, like, witchcraft kind of stuff, or not witchcraft, but
priest, like she said, priestess, you know.
Yeah,
some,
like a ritual.
Some rites. Mm-hmm.
Spartacus and company arrive to the edge of a cliff and spy on a well-lit villa in the night. The dominus of the house is fucking one of the slaves as his villa is quietly being demand of soldiery protection. Just after he asks his slave Tiberius to place cock and ass, the onslaught is no longer quiet.
Who's cock and whose ass?
He's banging the female slave who looks very bored. She's just kind of like looking at the watch. Like,
she looks bored again later too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just.
So is he about to fuck that dude?
No, what he's telling Tiberius to do is he's like, I'm about to finish.
Plug.
Yeah, I'm about to get off. So I need you to come over here and stick it up my ass.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Okay,
so
I'm
yeah.
Confused.
So could.
he had position in the house, didn't he?
Yeah.
In doggy style.
Position in his dominus's ass.
Hmm.
So we see Mira helps with the attack of the villa, probably for the first time in a violent way. She actually takes a knife and starts slashing at somebody, which I thought was cool.
She almost looks surprised that she did it, too.
And you know, scared at the same done, time.
Yeah.
She's like, fuck!
Well, I'm surprised they had him close at hand. Like, okay, you guys wait here. We'll give you the sign when we're ready, but everybody just went in on the charge. It must have been a good speech, you know? Like,
yeah.
Let's go, yeah! And everybody goes down.
He gave a Churchill speech right before, you know.
Yeah, I did say he gives speech to the newly freed slaves. Okay, Spartacus, at this point, gives speech to the newly freed slaves, and the house dominus is brought out. He is being snarky until he hears the name Spartacus. Then he starts to cower.
And he wets himself.
Crixus has words with this dominus.
Well, which starts, with being thrown against the wall, because he just kind of asks him, he says, you're the dominus of this house? It's like, yeah, I would have words. And then the next thing you see, the next scene, is this guy flying slowly through the air until he hits the wall.
I wouldn't want Crixus's ire upon me.
No, it would suck.
So after some coercion, the Dominus reveals that Nebbia was actually there, and then she was put to cart after. Crixus says after. And so finds out how Nebbia's been treated, and which is predictable, really.
Yeah.
And
we get another window into the Roman view on slaves here, too, because, you know, he says after, meaning, you know, this guy just basically used her, and he holds his face up, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know she had meaning. And then he says, what does he say?
She's a woman.
Did she not have breath?
Did her heart not beat?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to squash his head like a melon, too, at that point.
Because he kept caressing his head.
Oh, he's going to smash it, but they didn't give it to us. It's all right, but we knew we got it.
And he said, you just saw a fucking slave. And that's when he punched him. And then when you see his body tossed out there, it's like this that cheekbone's caved in or something. So now we have Mira fending off Raskos on behalf of that newly freed slave. And I meant to look up that blonde girl's name.
We'll have it by next episode anyway. Yeah.
So this leads to a discussion, as I mentioned earlier, about...
Let's call her Blondie.
Blondie.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah Harry.
Yeah.
Debbie.
Is she contending with Alethea?
No.
Not even close?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There will be one who will, though, later.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You say that now.
Yeah, but... you do say that now.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting in the way of your recap.
Whatever. Okay. This leads to a discussion about men in general, which leads to a discussion about the nature of Mira's relationship with Spartacus. She herself is not sure where she stands with him, and it is apparent that this bothers her.
Mm-hmm. She should have slapped her and been like, I'm his number one girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's, no matter where,
Sparty's
what
a
you
pimp.
Yeah. Whether he loves me or not. So now we have Spartacus and Agron discussing their wounded and lack of losses. Agron again voices frustration with the Gauls. Crixus tells Spartacus what he has learned about Nebbia. Very disturbing news about her being passed from Dominus to Dominus. And Spartacus makes a point to reassure Crixus regarding their intentions in freeing Nebbia. Crixus leaves to go calm his men and to reign in Raskos' cock.
Is this where they start singing the cock rages on?
Yeah.
They're
starting to give teasers that Gannicus is going to be back.
It's a reminder, I think. Yeah,
for sure.
Don't forget about the Gannicus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, where they find him, that's what I can't wait to see. Spartacus is a hound for that.
You could just picture it. He's having sex with three women, and Spartacus just pulls back the drape. What you doing? Yeah. Hey,
I'll give you a minute. I've heard of.
Yeah. I'll give you a minute.
You don't know me, but we gotta talk when you're done.
I use two swords.
Then he just winks.
Then lingers, closes, and leaves.
He's all, I'm leaving, I'm walking away. Yeah. And he just kind of slaps his thigh. Yeah. He's still there. Check out the new book on the New York Times bestseller list, Voyeurism in the Time of Spartacus.
Yeah.
Spartacus and Agron discuss Crixus and his heartache. Spartacus is still intent on his word regarding the freeing of Nebbia. Agron argues that Nebbia will not be the woman she was, and besides, they should be freeing fighting men and not worthless house slaves. Spartacus says that every man has his worth. He again regales the newly freed slaves from the villa. He gives them weapons.
You know, you can kind of understand where Agron's coming from, but I think it's good of Spartacus to stand his ground. He's also being kind of shrewd here, and he's saying he realizes Crixus' worth, but he's not going to be able to utilize him with his full potential until he gets Nebbia safe, or until he figures out that she's dead, one of the two.
He's doing the same thing that Bodiatus was kind of doing, a little bit. Not in the fact that he was manipulating
him, but in the evil sense.
Fact that we're not going to, this guy's going to, just like you said, they're not going to get his full potential until he finds out what
happened. He can't concentrate on
because he was there himself,
right? Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think it's smart of him to be doing it like that.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, he gave him his word.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And they're friends now too, and that's how you build a friendship by helping each other. Next scene: Alethea's boobs.
Very nice.
She's just trying to soak away all the suffering she's gone through from her husband. All the abuse.
Yeah, and that rose petal bath.
Well,
and,
you know, it's the small things when you're in an abusive relationship that helps you get through it. You know, she's still living in that house where they took advantage of her.
She has to resort to that memory of Spartacus.
Well,
to
that,
give
that
her a
was interesting.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It makes me think that that might be his kid. Is the time frame aligned with that for her being pregnant? Do we know yet? You guys suck. Because it made me think that that could have possibly been his kid, or she's like in love.
I don't know.
With that Sparty.
Yes, she begins to masturbate, and then Glabra performs Masturbatus Interruptus.
Well, she. Masturbatus Interruptus.
Is that a Harry Potter spell?
Masturbatus Interruptus.
He had to do that to Ron every time he came into the room. He's like, Masturbatus Interruptus. Come on, Harry. But that's a good one. You should put that one in the Urban Dictionary or look it up, sure. Masturbatus Interruptus. But actually, if we're being, you know, completely accurate, she had her slave do the masturbation because she pulls her slave's hand over and has her start doing it.
Mm-hmm. So is that not masturbation then?
It's aided masturbation.
So, yes, Glabber interrupting. He tells her he is grateful for her recent sacrifice, but he has more to request from her. He wants her to attend the market with Lucretia to purchase her shaman supplies. Mm-hmm. Alithia is derisive of Lucretia's newfound connection with the gods. Alithia says she is not to be trusted, and Glabra reminds her that she once called her friend. He then says he is ready to believe anything at this point if it aids in bringing down Spartacus. He then tells her to finish bathing and get herself to his bed. She's not aroused.
Yeah. She wants the Spartacus. She doesn't want the Glabber. Mm-hmm.
So now we get to a scene where Spartacus and Mira are relishing in the opportunity to sleep in a proper bed. And it turns out Mira has never, ever slept in a bed before, which I was like, what? That's
that bed looked kind of small, like a twin.
Yeah. Well, people were smaller in Roman
times. And didn't she sleep in a bed with him in his cell?
Oh, that wasn't really a bed, though. That was just like a cot on the ground. Like, yeah.
He made her sleep on the floor that first night. Yeah.
That's true.
He can check up over there.
Yeah, in that corner, that dirty, my piss corner.
Yeah.
I got some hay for you.
He puts out a little bowl of water. So, you know.
Number one girl now. She gets to sleep in a bed with him.
Yep. Mira wants to know what this relationship means to Spartacus. He tells her enough without telling her he loves her.
It was slick. Because at the end of it, he was like,
upsets me because
I like you now.
Yeah.
I know that's his ultimate love, but, you know, Mira's worthy of it.
Yeah, but.
You have my permission to love Mira if I die.
Okay, that works.
So
I mean,
you know.
So, all right. Yeah.
So don't worry about it. But only Mira.
Okay, only Mira.
You can know, love her if I die too, man.
Excellent. Well, yeah, Sura did tell him that he was fated to never love another.
Anybody else. You know? Yeah.
And so it's out of his hands, really.
Think he thinks about that. We should take it back.
Yeah.
Take it back.
Yeah. I want to love her.
No, it was very, because at first it was like, oh, he's about to let her down really hard. He's like, I deal with a lot of pain and suffering, but. Then the
but your pussy's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much what he said. When I'm around you, it's warm and soft.
Girl, when you're here, you're here. But, you know. Well, he's so driven and focused, though, that you got to feel sorry for anybody who's really trying to gain his affections. Because they're just not, he's just not somebody who's really into cultivating that side of himself at this point.
Well, he's trying to, like, slowly get her into sleeping with other people so he can watch. And then he'll love her. Girl, I love you.
I've got a plan for you.
Then they are attacked by the newly freed firebrand Tiberius.
Kirk?
Yeah, he does a pretty cool move. He takes, I don't know if it's like a scarf or something, whatever it was, some sort of piece of silk, and ties it around his neck and flips him over.
Very Jackie Chan-like.
Yeah, yeah, it was kind of Jackie Chan-like.
Tiberius is not happy with his current circumstance because he had position as a slave in the house of his Dominus. Spartacus asks what would his Dominus have done if Tiberius had attacked him in the way he has attacked Spartacus, and Tiberius says he would have seen him dead. This is an
op- my cock in his
first, but then he would kill me. This is an opportunity for Spartacus to show how he differs from the Romans, who do have power. Spartacus will not abuse his newly found power, but he's going to use it to help empower slaves. Crixus is concerned with empowering slaves that have proven to be dangerous. Agron agrees with Crixus for once.
He
looks at Tiberius like, it's your fucking fault that I'm agreeing.
He's like, God, I find myself agreeing with the Gaul. And that's one of the things that made me laugh out loud. That was funny because but you have to know the characters and their relationships and stuff like that.
Crixus gives this one to Spartacus, but he does say that if this slave makes the attempt again, he will kill him. Tiberius, it turns out, was in the room while they were conversing the whole time, because the way they staged it, you think they're just having this conversation with each other, and then the camera pans back and Tiberius was actually there, which,
guys, I'm right here.
Yeah,
I heard all of that.
I can hear you.
Because Crixus turns and punches him right before he leaves the room.
Douchebag. And there's no mark to get, so you're just always going to be the douche.
Yeah.
I wrote, do you think Crixus punches more than he handshakes?
Yes.
Probably.
Definitely. I've seen like 2 handshakes in 4 seasons, so, you know.
It's been 3.
3? Okay, so a total of 3. that's less than a handshake per season, and he hits a lot. Yeah. So
I think there's been 3.
We'll say at least 2.
Okay, so.
Confirm.
Agron asks, how are we to train this slave? And Spartacus says that we'll train this slave the way I was trained, in Badiatus is Ludus. And Agron says, well, that turned out really well.
That was awesome.
Yeah, another nod to Earn.
Basically saying, train this guy and then he's going to kill you.
Yeah, and rebel against you like the way you rebelled against Badiatus. So back in the pits with Animaeus, we get to watch him kick some ass. And it transitions to past Animaeus and begins to show the origin of his close relationship with Titus.
Now, do you guys know what the Y on his forehead would stand for?
I don't know if it's actually a Y.
It looked like a Y.
But
maybe.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was like maybe like to his origin, maybe something symbolic from
his tribe or something.
Yeah.
He looks crazy as fuck with that fucking white.
That white face paint.
Yeah. And that guy tries to be intimidated. He's all, blah! And he's just all.
He just stands there.
Unfazed.
Now, I have to say about Animaeus' fights in the pits, they're fun to watch, but and I kind of understand why they did it, but I almost expect more out of him. On second viewing, I felt like he wasn't fighting up to his skill level.
Of course, because he wanted, it's like suicide by cop.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's not going to kill himself,
but
so he's not going to fight wholeheartedly against these people in the pit. He wants them to kill him, obviously, because he's like, bring more.
Yeah.
But his fighting style is going back to the way it was before Titus. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's even stabbing in the neck like he did.
It's almost feral.
He sees himself as an animal without honor.
It's not very disciplined or anything like that. It's just a brawl. Yeah.
We also see a young Quintus. To me, this is interesting because they're talking about Animaeus finding a purpose. And Titus tells him that one must learn to kneel if he is to rise. And I think this is with Animaeus kind of going back and reflecting on this. It's also a message for the present Animaeus revisiting that, because I think it's why he has a problem with Spartacus, because Spartacus never learned to kneel. Mm-hmm. And so, but yet he still rose. But now Animaeus has to learn to kneel to Spartacus because Spartacus, you know, and I think what he's having a problem with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's going to be his new purpose.
And this whole episode's it makes me start to really like Titus, and that is his name.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been a whole different show if he had been the one in charge of the Ludus, I think, from the get-go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I doubt Spartacus would have lived as long, but, you know, because I think he would have just realized he was a pain and probably would have just killed him and not done the whole thing with his wife. But you can see why Animaeus was such a faithful and loyal slave, because of the way he treated him from the very beginning. Saved him from the pits, gave him purpose, treated him with respect. You know, I liked it. I really enjoyed the flashbacks.
Probably what would have happened, because when Badiatus brought Spartacus to find out his purpose, he was aping his father.
Yeah.
And then he took that information and did what he did with it. And Titus would have taken that. He would have brought Spartacus in, same thing, found out his purpose. But he would have legitimately brought her back without all the shenanigans and murder.
Exactly.
And then he would have, you know.
Spartacus would be champion to this day.
Yeah, he would probably be living
as a slave
with
Sura. And then, but at some point, he would have had to either kill Crixus or be killed by him.
Yeah.
So there's that.
How would his dad have handled the Legatus coming over? Because he was always bowing to people above him. If the Legatus had wanted him dead, he might have just been like, okay, my station.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
But he always seemed like a person who put things in balance, you know, and he weighed it and he would say, well, what is this worth? You know, I want to please this person of higher position, but at the same time, are they asking something that's, wrong of me?
Or he would have definitely bought Spartacus for the same reason that Spartiatus did.
Yeah.
But I do like him. I like his dad more and more.
Me too. Okay. So I already said Animaeus has lost his purpose and he must find it again. And this is basically the main story that's underlying this episode. And neck laceration seemed to be his preferred method of slaying when he's in the pits.
Oh, shit.
And his current purpose seems to be a death wish. So now we've got Spartacus and men training the newly freed slaves. Spartacus personally sees to Tiberius's training. The other men, including Agron, watch Tiberius closely and not without apprehension. Is this where Agron says pity? I think it is.
Does it? What does he say pity about?
Somebody was like, well, we'll eventually have to put that dog down.
Agron says pity. Pity.
So Lucretia and Alethea are now in the marketplace. Alethea questions Lucretia's connection to the gods and her faulty memory. Lucretia says her memories are slowly coming back, but apparently she only remembers their first meeting at this point. And a woman interrupts for a blessing from Lucretia. Lucretia has ascended as a spiritual figure in the eye of the lay Romans of Capua. And Lucretia proceeds to bless others when Sepia calls out to Alethea. Yeah, I remember you laughing at that part.
There's something inherently comical about that, because then she starts blessing everybody and you're like,
smacking people in the forehead with the...
Yeah, he yielded.
She's whispering to the Jupiter's cock. Jupiter's cock.
Sepia calls out to Alethea, and they become reacquainted. It appears that Alethea has met her match.
This is kind of like a younger Alethea, mm-hmm. you know, and she's just kind of seeing herself maybe 10 years ago or something like that, you know. Yeah. Like I said before, she's pregnant, and she's playing the dutiful wife role and everything, and she sees this young, attractive woman, and she's just like, well, that was me, now I'm this.
And that young, attractive woman's like, man, I hope, like, the gods prevent me from having to deal with your fate.
Yeah, they spare me from this, and she's just like, ooh. You see that, I think of it, I've never called it this before, but Alethea's shit smell look, it's her shit look, and they just have the, and that's, she has that look again, you know, like when somebody's affronted her.
And then Lucretia's passed a note by a hooded figure.
I knew it. I knew it when it happened who it was.
And we saw that hooded figure before, right?
In the pits.
Yeah. And I was like, is that Lando? Because you think of, like, Jabba's palace.
He removes the little, thing from his face. And he's got
the tusks. He's got the tusks.
Yeah. It was pretty obvious. Because it's the same slave robes he wore in the first season. Exact almost. You know, it's Asher's MO. I mean, granted, I put a question mark, but I was 95% sure it was him. Sneaky fuckface.
I remember from watching it the first time, I remember thinking, that's got to be him, but you don't know until
not positive, but that's the exact shady robes that he wore.
So Sepius and Glaber meet. It's a bit of a pissing contest. The fact that Spartacus is common foe helps bring them to attempt in working together. And Glaber's actually trying to do that, which I think is good on Glaber, but this guy, Sepius, is...
Glaber's being pragmatic, and Sepius is being... Every season of this show, there's a pompous, young, lordling kind of character. Last season, it was Varinius? Or
in Gods of the Arena?
Gods of the Arena, yeah.
Well, there was Talius and it was Vettius.
Vettius. And then there was somebody in the first season too, if I'm not correct, or if I'm not mistaken.
Wouldn't that just be Bodiatus?
Might have been Bodiatus. Yeah, I guess he could have filled that role. But there's somebody who's always kind of young and like an upstart, you know, and this guy fills that role perfectly. But he's not looking at this pragmatically at all. He doesn't care if anybody apprehends Spartacus. He's just like, whatever.
Well, he just doesn't want to share the glory like you already said or somebody already said. And I think that's what changes later. That's what it takes from a Roman is to not worry about their own glory so much in order to be successful. Glauber mentions Lucretia as a guarantee in capturing Spartacus. Cepheus is derisive of this and continues to further deride Glauber by pointing out how convenient it was that Alypia was the only Roman to make it out alive at the massacre. Cepheus also disparages the fact that Glauber has acquired current position only because of his father-in-law. And then Glauber threatens him about removing his tongue and all. And Cepheus is like, well, you still won't have my men.
Yeah, that was a good scene because they're both standing up and he says, you talk to me like that again and I'll have your tongue. And he goes, but not my men.
I liked how they used the fig too to show like the emotion of Cepheus. At one point, I thought he was going to throw it like over there because he first like cuts it open and then he
sticks his finger in it when he's getting mad at what Glauber's saying. He's like, yeah. It's like his little stress ball or something, squishy.
He cuts it in half, and that right after that is when Glauber says, "We cleave to the heart of things."
Mm, you know, you're dealing with some people who just aren't quite right in the head when Glauber's the voice of reason. It's like he's the sympathetic character on the screen at that point. You're like, these people are shit.
This is bad.
So now we're back with the rebels, and the Gauls are singing about how their cocks rage on. And Rascos orders a slave to bring him wine, the blonde slave, and Blondie. And Spartacus vetoes that and tells him to get his own wine.
That's going to be my number two, bitch. So leave her alone.
Yeah.
Spartacus, don't play that.
Crixus and Spartacus talk regarding the new slaves. Crixus wants to haze the new slaves, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, don't you remember? If you're not a brother, you get hazed.
He was already pissing in the porridge.
But you think it was like an intimate scene to have Crixus laying on the bed like that? Because the last time we saw Spartacus, no, he wasn't laying on the bed.
He was sitting. Well, no, Crixus is on that, like,
it's like a Roman
divan, or how do you pronounce those? Divan or divan? It's like spelled D-I-V-A-N, but I've never known how to pronounce it. Is it divan?
Let's just say that.
Just say couch. Okay, he's reclining on the couch. You know, is he eating something or is he drinking something? And he's talking to Spartacus. You know, Spartacus is sitting at his desk all businesslike, you know, and then Crixus is lying there and he's just like, yeah, you know. We should probably make these guys go through some stuff. But it shows, he's got a little wine.
It's a parallel to the last scene, too. Because Crixus is eating something like Cepheus was, but anyway.
Well, you know, it shows the familiarity that they have with each other. They're comfortable around each other now, which is good. Mm-hmm. It's not all, you know,
laxed.
Yeah.
Porcupine quills and everything. Now he can just kind of chill out and speak his mind.
Yeah,
which
it's
is kind of
a
laxed
scene, but the conversation is very serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Spartacus is against hazing the new slaves because he wants to, you know, have the word spread that they're not like the Romans, that, you know, you can have place of position among them. And then Agron and Tiberius talk. And I wrote, note that Agron brought Tiberius something to drink, which is a contrast to the previous scene of Rascos ordering another slave to bring him beverage.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah, I didn't catch that. That's good.
And this is something Agron did out of his own free will. And out of kindness, despite his misgivings toward the slave. He is, of course, trying to entreat the slave as well. We learn that Tiberius is Syrian, which causes Agron to recall Asher and his treacherous ways. And then they discuss their brothers.
Another laughing moment, because he goes, treacherous shit.
Yeah, he was treacherous fuck as there ever was.
Oh, treacherous fuck,
like
yeah.
So Rascos is finally getting his cock wet with that new slave. Mira thinks he's raping her and decocks the new slave from Rascos. She like uses a shucking.
So would this be Rascos Interruptus?
Yes. Yes. The new slave reveals that she willingly chose to lay with him because it is the only way she can ensure her own survival.
She paid with the only coin that she has.
As you do.
So yeah. Sons of Spartacus. I'm a crow eater girl. Yeah. You're my own man.
Yeah. Walking down this road. Oh, sorry, that was horrible.
No, but I really like this. I like this interplay. I like this discussion. So, because it's
true, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something important for Mira's character.
Well, it makes Mira kind of stop and think. Am I only in this position because Spartacus is banging me? You know what I mean? Or do I actually hold some sort of worth outside of that?
Yeah, I wrote here, I said, I really like how this has been used to define Mira's character because this causes her to question her role in the group. Is she just merely someone's bitch? This is not something that sits well with her. I also like how she was aiding the attack of the villa before the question of her own purpose was brought to the forefront in her own mind. She has already come to her purpose without realizing. Now it is time for her actualization. She does see herself capable of being equal among her male counterparts, and she sets herself to that purpose.
Agreed.
All right. Lucretia prepares ritual. Alethea makes jokes. Lucretia treatises to the gods. That's not what I meant. Lucretia treatises to the gods, allude to other things that disturb Alethea. Alethea now becomes focused on the knife. And I didn't notice it till this time, because you see Alethea, like, she sees the knife, and then she looks at it again, and then when she has the idea, there's a ripple in the water behind the knife, and it's almost like a ripple of thought happened to her at the same time. Like, that's a good editor. The slaying of the goat does not bring immediate results, which encourages the petulance of Alethea. Back to Animaeus, his purpose is still death, but he is still revisiting times past. We see when he receives his mark. Young Animaeus reveals his purpose to fight for the House of Badiatis. Animaeus, in the present, taking an impossible beating from a warhammer, like Spartacus saw.
Yeah, he gets hit in the face with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
night yeah, night
it's over.
Night
yeah,
night.
Yeah, I know. That's
if you weren't dead, you'd be knocked out.
Oh yeah, you'd be
one of the two for sure.
Barred.
Yeah, your brain would be pureed.
But you know, there's some parallels too, because when Spartacus was in the pit and thing in the pit, he was taking some beatings that you wouldn't have come back from either.
You know what else? What happened in the pit with Spartacus, he saw Sura,
just
like Animaeus
sees himself
and death. Titus.
Yeah, see your life flashing before your eyes, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And that was... Anyway, I think it's, you know, this is Animaeus' own hero's journey, too, that he's going through. But anyway, that's where Spartacus got his purpose, too, because remember, he came back from the underworld and...
Yeah.
Time to leave the past and start on a new path, Animaeus. The scene in the pit is spliced with Lucretia's ongoing ritual. The music is reminiscent of the music that was used in Xena. Remember when Xena goes into the Amazonian afterlife?
I do remember that, but I honestly don't remember the music because I've only seen the episode.
That, like,
oh, yeah, like the screaming kind of effect in the background.
Like Hmm.
Or the witches chanting or something.
Yeah.
She looks deranged the whole time she's doing this. Like... Lucy Lawless did an excellent job in this. She's
always.
Just like, her eyes have that like crazy one eyebrow up, one eyebrow down, and she's all
right. The goat's dead already, and she's going in it like a tauntaun.
Yeah.
Yes.
A little person pops out in like with Skywalker clothes.
Oh, my dad sent me a joke. What's the temperature of the inside of a tauntaun? Hmm. It's lukewarm.
I've seen that before.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was going a little too far, I think. I might have stopped her, like, you already killed it.
Yeah.
Why are you gutting it now?
Well, because certain, like, organs have certain magical properties.
Okay,
so she's
going for the liver and the lungs and stuff like that.
Yeah, she didn't have Eye of Newt. She had to make do with goat particles or whatever. Anyway. Alethea has now obtained the knife. She's like holding it right there when the slave comes in.
Shouldn't have hesitated. Just gone with it.
And this is a great scene because the slave comes in and goes, men are approaching. And then it switches right over to the villa where men are approaching.
Mm-hmm.
See, just like a battered person, she's going after one of her aggressors.
displaying common
she's
behavior.
She's already got a rape child in her stomach.
Yeah, it was rape. She was not willing participant at all.
Nope. She was.
She did not facilitate that in any way. She didn't even ask for it.
Nope. Mm-mm.
She never approached Lucretia and said, hey.
She didn't want Spartacus.
Hey, pimp.
I thought the man in gold was my husband who was in Rome at the time.
Yeah.
Thought it was Crixus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had a Spartacus rape her.
Girl.
Also, at this time, Animaeus is being apprehended by a cloaked figure.
Well, he's which, Animaeus
is
it about
death,
to,
or is it Asher?
Well, the thing is, though, this is like the one thing that I was expecting a little more from, because they stop the fight and they kill the guy that's going to kill Animaeus, whatever his name was, big hammer guy, right?
Yeah.
if there was gambling and stuff going on, there would have been an outright riot, because anybody who had their money on the new guy would have been fucking pissed, because now they're not going to get paid.
But Asher kind of,
like, had a goon with him.
Asher put the kibosh on that. Him and whoever those two guys were that drug in Animaeus later on.
Yeah, he got
spoiler.
Goons.
Yeah, they killed a couple of people, so everybody just kind of scattered.
Yeah,
you know, because most of the people
they would
watching
have guards in the pits, though. Otherwise,
yeah,
no.
You would think.
But
I mean,
all right. I mean, that's just pretty minor complaint.
Yeah,
I just wanted to see some more fucking killing.
But he was going to be killed
yeah.
if Asher
he
hadn't
done, deeds,
done that. So
he was finally there.
Which is cool that Asher is wearing that cloak, because he looks like Death as well, which is what Animaeus wanted, but it's not Death.
No. Yeah.
Fucking Asher.
Douchebag.
So now we got Tiberius greeting these Roman soldiers at the gates of the villa as the other rebels look on. They are apprehensive about Tiberius's loyalty. Crixus thinks that Tiberius has betrayed them and launches himself at the soldiers. After this scuffle has ended, Tiberius explains himself. This is, of course, after Tiberius saves Spartacus' life. And his real name is Nasir. Any comments about that scene?
That was a good scene, because you watch
it. What's the new guy's name again?
Nasir.
Nasir.
All right. I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
We get it.
You'll get it. You'll get it.
I'm just going to call him Kirk for now.
Why Kirk?
James Tiberius Kirk.
Oh.
That's all I kept thinking about in the stupid show. It's all. It's dumb. But
No, it's just...
It
Tiberius.
Nasir. I really like Nasir because he's a very brave person and he has a good heart. Turns out Asher is a cloaked dude. We already said that. And he delivers Animaeus to Glaber. Lucretia takes credit. Her and Asher eye each other conspiratorially.
Mm.
End of episode.
I know, and then she crinkles up the paper, then it's like, alright, she's not nearly as fucked up crazy as she was playing. She's almost back to her old self.
She's, yeah, but she looks fucking crazy when
oh,
she does
yeah,
it.
Oh, yeah, she's playing the part. But now I start to question whether or not she's actually a fucking fruitcake. I mean, I know she's a fruitcake, but
she's pretending?
She's inspiring. Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's good. Fucking Asher. Hope he gets gangbanged at the end of this by a bunch of gulls.
What was your name again? Cigarette?
No,
Ashtray.
Ashtray. Fool. God just brought it. Chocolate Thunder.
What's next week's episode?
Next episode is The Greater Good.
The Greater Good. See y'all then.
All right.
This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Esoteric Studios and Axolotl Tank Productions.